I'm Jody, the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr, the doc.
And this is Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas.
We bring together the mom experience and the doc expertise to give you the information and tools you need to help make the next right decision to get your child back.
Let's dive in.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Mom and Doc Talk. We are working through our homeopathic healing series where we're talking about specific symptoms that are prominent in pans and pandas and how we typically see things heal and what the healing journey looks like, things to consider, sorts of that sort of thing. And we're joined today by Chrissy so that we can get a more robust experience of the mom side of homeopathic healing of OCD. So welcome, Chrissy. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So when we have moms on board to talk about this, I always like to start with what your experience of OCD is like, or what your experience of the symptoms for pans pandas are like as we're working through this so that we just have that conceptualization. So Chrissy, would you like to start with your experience with OCD?
Yes, sure. So both my son and me have experience with this symptom. I would even beg to say that my experience was worse with this symptom than him. And I think that's kind of par the course for most symptoms, but especially OCD. It just varies from person to person. It's a different experience. Everybody, you know, it tends to be a very tough symptom because it kind of infiltrates all aspects of our life, right? You know, and with the healing journey, it tends to be one of those wax wing kind of hang on for a while symptoms before it really starts to go. And so I would say with my son, his experience with OCD was like inspecting food, so bruise on an apple, looking at expiration dates, like things that he had no care in the world about before all of this started, like fixations with that. He was doing hair twirling, like twirling his hair almost compulsively. And this is going to sound really strange, but he would read books a lot constantly. So reading a book, twirling hair, and it was, he always had to have a book, twirling hair. He couldn't just sit. It was like this compulsion. And sadly, he barely reads anymore. So it's like I knew that that heightened, you know, thing, it was a thing. And then kind of ruminating on topics, fixating on things, we would see that in him. For myself, I had extremely debilitating intrusive thoughts coming into my healing process. And I've always had a little bit of that throughout my life, you know, wax waned. But when my son was going through what he was going through, it got really, really bad. I was completely just fixated on him and focused on him and all these bad thoughts. And I was stuck in my brain. And so that's kind of how it looked in our home for both of us.
So interesting, because we have a tiny little flavor of that, but also it's different too. Just like you were saying, it's different for everybody.
Yes.
With Avery, I'm going to say this thing first, is we've been recording other episodes, like my mom brain gets so confused between what actually is OCD, because there's so many like overlaps. And even after we recorded the ARFID episode the other day, I went back and I looked, because I'm like, I don't remember really kind of how that, and that was actually Avery's very initial OCD, was like she was obsessing about the food. And about how it could impact her if she ate it or whatever. But then it just morphed. And for her, OCD was such a subtle thing. But then it was like, I would imagine after a round of antibiotics, whenever we went off of it and things blew back up again, because that's how it happened every single time, it turned into so many different things. And I was making a list, and she was like, she was obsessed with reading speed limit signs everywhere we went. She would have to read them and pay attention to how fast I was going. And if I was going even a mile over the speed limit, it was a problem. She was reading Bible stories nonstop all day, every day. But I had to understand the Bible story. And if I didn't understand it well enough, we had to start over again. I mean, she needed to know all of the things that someone could do, all the laws that someone could break in order to go to jail, like all the reasons why somebody would go to jail, which probably was a combo of the speed limit sign thing. And then she had her just right OCD where, you know, the drawing had to be just right. And if it wasn't, we would start over 47 times if need be. And the just right ponytail, like having to be in the exact, like the exact right level. And we were late to school lots and lots and lots of mornings because we couldn't get the ponytail just right. And then I didn't even think about, Chrissy just said it, intrusive thoughts. That is kind of OCD too, right?
That is what it is. Yeah. So OCD is intrusive thoughts that you can't control, that you're obsessing about. So intrusive and repetitive thoughts, and then compulsive behaviors that are meant to control the intrusive thoughts. And that you can have, they can also be a little bit separate. Sometimes you have compulsions that aren't necessarily clearly connected to, I have to do this because this makes this other thing not, this calms down this intrusive thought. But so it's compulsive behaviors, intrusive and repetitive thoughts, the two of them together is what OCD is.
It's so interesting because my brain never thought of it as OCD. I just thought of it as intrusive thoughts. Anyways, just had me a little aha moment there.
That's really, I think, an important thing that we have to say every time we talk about OCD, especially when we talk about the healing of OCD, is that there is a difference between just intrusive thoughts and OCD, and that's the intensity of it and the way that it impacts your life, how much of an impact it has on just your activities of daily life. So every human being in the world has intrusive thoughts. This could be the thought of, I'm going to be late. I'm not good enough. I'm not thin enough. I'm not smart enough. I need to be doing this. I need to be doing that. What if something bad happens to my kid? Like, everybody has an intrusive thought, a thought that you don't want to have happen and that you don't feel like you have any control over it coming to you. The difference is where it crosses the line into OCD is when those thoughts become so profound that it interferes with your life, that you can't move through it, that it takes over you, and oftentimes that you have to do compulsive behaviors to control that intrusive thought, right? So I bring this up just because it's vital for understanding that you are not, with any medicine, really, even like conventional psych meds, you're not going to get rid of every thought you don't want to have and only have the thoughts that you want to have. And so I think that there are some people who struggle when they are doing well, or kids who maybe just don't understand this, and being able to talk to your kids about, you will, there, it's part of being human that you're going to have thoughts you don't necessarily want to have. It's what you understand and what level of control you have over those thoughts versus how much control those thoughts have over you. And that's what we're looking at, getting to the place where you have more control over those thoughts, not whether they show up, but what you do with them and how you move through them, versus having absolutely no control over the thoughts and the thoughts having complete control over you. That's what we need to move through. So you guys both shared some things about just right OCD, some health-related OCD. There's lots of different ways that OCD can present. Another couple of common ones that we see are OCD about religion, so scrupulosity OCD. We see, even in young kids, sometimes we see OCD about sexual thoughts or sexuality that can also be really. I'm trying to think if there's any others. I mean, there's several others. I'm not going to be able to just off the cuff remember all of the different presentations for OCD. And I'm sure that even if I remembered all of them that I knew of, I would miss something. So there are just lots and lots of ways that OCD can present. It's not about a certain flavor of the anxiety and the intrusive thoughts. It's more about the, again, the intensity and the ways that you adapt to them, right? So because OCD is one of these things, the way I sort of describe it in the healing process is that OCD wears a trail into a mountainside with the repetitive thoughts. So it's just like walking the same place and the same thought. It's like wearing a trail into your brain, wearing a trail into the side of a mountain. And so you can't, one, it's going to take work to just get them to slow down because we all have them. And so we need to get them to slow down and have time to reseed that trail. And it takes time. You can't just stop walking on a trail on a mountainside and expect that it's going to the next day be full and you don't notice it anymore. It takes a while for the dirt to get loosen up enough that it can accept seeds that they can then take root and germinate, and then they can start to grow. And so that the grass is growing and you don't see the trail so much anymore. So I use that example because just like you can imagine the amount of time it takes to regrow grass over a trail that's been worn into a hillside, it's going to take time and it's going to be a slow process. And it's going to generally be it's going to follow more of the 2 to 3 steps forward and 1 step back. Sometimes it's going to feel like 0.2 steps forward and 0.1 steps back because it can just be a really slow and stubborn symptom because of just the nature of how it works and the ways that our neurons sort of fire together and everything when we have these things occur. It tends to be more persistent. And the change I would offer to myself and to everybody listening is that if you happen to be a lucky person and you see OCD only with a flare, nothing in between, and that it is that you catch it early before it starts to be more persistent, those tend to be faster healing. If we're still only OCD during a flare, but if we're in the state where OCD has been existing for a long time and it's been building, and this happens more often than you know, because so many people don't necessarily recognize their child has OCD until they've had it for a while.
Yeah.
It's not always super apparent. I don't know if either of you had that experience or if it was really clear to you up front that it was OCD.
I think that was our experience, was that I just wasn't catching on to these certain things until it was a bigger problem. And then I was like, oh, wait, he's been doing that off and on since he's like, in the crib, like he's hair twirling. He used to pull his hair out when he was little. And I was like, don't do that. And then he wouldn't do it for a while. And then he would do it again. And yeah. And then it became more forefront and more of a thing at some point.
I think with Avery, I didn't really recognize it that early because she's like, when she gets curious about something, she asks lots and lots of questions. Mm-hmm. So that's like normal. I was like, oh, okay, we're going to talk about stop signs again today or speed limit signs again today. Or, you know, she comes from a family full of lawyers. She wants to know about all the laws. And then she just gets to asking more questions and more questions. And so I didn't really, it took me a little while to be like, oh, okay, this is problem.
And this is where it can get tricky sometimes, that you don't recognize that it's been building for a while, because OCD, especially in younger kids, they can present in so many ways, and older kids too. Just, it depends on what it is that they're experiencing. But if there is anything about the thoughts that they're having that are inconsistent with family values, which is pretty frequent that you see that, then sometimes they're afraid to talk about them, or they don't understand them, or they're confused by them. So they might not be telling you that they're having these thoughts, but you're seeing behaviors that are triggered by these intrusive and repetitive thoughts. So you might find out that your kid who's been sad for a while and seems a little bit depressed and withdrawn, it's because of intrusive thoughts that has led to that. Rage. I can't tell you how many rage kids we see that it's the OCD that drives them to rage because they are so angry that they can't control the thoughts, and they feel the anger inside and then they take it out on the world because they're young and they don't know what to do. And it's got to go somewhere because it's feeling impossible to withhold. And then anxiety that you might not recognize is to the point of like intrusive and repetitive thoughts. And you might not connect the compulsions or the behaviors to a thought that you're just not aware of happening. And much like you said, Jody, there's also the question of, is this a developmentally normal situation where they're just very curious about something and they're wanting to learn more, or they're asking a lot of questions because it's just what's on their mind? Or is this actually more of an OCD that they're trying to ask questions around as a way, is their compulsion asking questions so that they can understand this intrusive thought that they're having more?
Yeah, I think that like right now is almost like we're highlighting why it's so important just to tell your provider what you're seeing too, because I remember with Avery, I was reporting sleep issues, like she couldn't go to sleep, and separation anxiety, which separation anxiety was a thing. But come to find out after talking through stuff with you, she was having intrusive thoughts whenever she, like, as she was trying to fall asleep at night. So I thought it was two other things, but it was, you know, intrusive thoughts were a part of that.
So sharing exactly what you are witnessing, as Jody just said, is vital for recovery, because just saying my kid has OCD, that's not going to help your homeopath find the correct remedy. Sometimes giving the specifics of OCD will be beneficial, and sometimes it's not going to be as beneficial. We talked about this in an episode about tics. I don't remember if it's already been out or if it's going to be out after this. I don't remember where we're at in the recording schedule, but tics and OCD are both things that in the materia medica, which is what a homeopath uses to find your specific unique symptoms and look for the totality, make sure that a remedy covers the totality of your case, it doesn't always have a lot of information about specific OCDs. And some of the things that kids are ultra concerned about right now, very specific things, they might not be something that people would even have thought about when the provings were originally done. And so we do work on updating them all the time. That said, we still have to work on reliable symptoms. And so it's not always useful to hyper-focus on specifics about OCD. Do the best that you can. If you know what the specific OCD is, share it. If the OCD thoughts, if they change or the compulsions change, share the changes as they happen, because it might end up being useful and it might not. Just ask your provider. How much do I need to focus in on this? What else do you need to know? If you're not sure, always ask. But don't neglect the rest of the case, because the rest of the symptoms are going to help give you a lot more clues than sometimes the hyper focus on OCD.
I think I want to encourage families who are in OCD. And I'm going to go backwards a little bit. I remember when we were going through this with Avery and you told me she's having intrusive thoughts as she was trying to go to sleep. And you told me, you're like, can you talk to her and ask her about what's going on? And at the time I was like, oh yeah, no, like I'm not going to drag her through that again. She's terrified. I don't want to talk to her about it. And you told me, you're like, I need, you know, that information could be valuable in order to help select a remedy. And I remember for a while, I wouldn't talk to her about them. And then I finally did. And again, my own PTSD or whatever it was, I just didn't want to make it worse or make her think about it when it wasn't happening. And then I ended up talking to her about it, and she gave me the information that you needed. And whether or not it was valuable to her, it really kind of shifted my mindset, because it wasn't actually Avery being problematic. It was her really struggling at bedtime. So instead of being frustrated about the situation, I was able to show up in a more supportive manner for her. And she would also, after that, she would come and talk to me about it and just tell me, hey, mom, like the guy that was going to come into our house, like this happened or that happened. And it was almost like a little like you enabled this communication and my own ability to support her through what she was going through. So I know it stings to talk about their stuff to our kids sometimes, but it really does. It can improve things relationally, but also it can give you guys the information that you need.
Yeah. I really love that you brought that up, Jody, because all I can think to say right now is that if you are showing your kids that you're afraid of their symptom, then they recognize they need to be afraid of it too. And it can almost make things worse, and it can build, because there is a lot of unspoken communication that happens about how we engage around these things. And for some reason, somebody needs to hear this too, because you're not going to get somebody to take actions by asking about the action if they're not going to do it. And so, in particular, because there are sometimes intrusive thoughts that are about self-harm, and asking somebody if they are having thoughts about self-harm is not going to make them harm themselves. If it is only going to give you information that you need so that you know what it is that you're dealing with. Because, you know, if you were to ask me, if it's not present in me, if you would say, Dr. Barr, do you have any thoughts of self-harm? I'm not suddenly going to think, you know, I wasn't having any thoughts of self-harm, but now that you ask, yep, that sounds like a really good idea. That's not going to happen. We're going to only get closer to the thing that's already a risk that we need to know more about so that we can help. And as you said, Jody, sometimes even shift your understanding of your child. This is not my child being a problem. This is my child having a problem. Chrissy, I'm curious if you're willing to share, and if you're not, totally fine. What was your experience as somebody who did have pretty debilitating OCD yourself when people would talk to you about the things related to your OCD?
Yeah, so I think at that point, I had really not talked about this to anybody other than my provider at the time, because I don't think that I understood what it was. Like Jody said, like with the intrusive thoughts, I didn't understand that that was OCD. Well, neither did I. I thought it was just, I'm an anxious person. I didn't realize that I was looping in my head and I was stuck and I was ruminating, I was fixating and there were compulsions. And so when I started talking about it with provider, I wanted it to get better. Whatever you need me to tell you, like I will tell you. And I know that it's not that way for kids sometimes, especially older teens, young adults, because some of these thoughts, we don't want them. They're unwanted thoughts. They can be embarrassing. They can be troubling. They can be all of those things. But, you know, especially when you're talking with one of our providers, it's a very safe space and you're not going to share with them something they haven't probably heard 50 times, you know, in the realm of OCD. So being very transparent was at the forefront of my mind going into that.
Yeah. Did you have any experience that if people, when you were asked about it, did you feel like, oh my gosh, now the OCD is going to be really, really, really terrible? And yeah.
No. Like you said, it's not going to cause you to have something you don't have or experience something in a way you're not experiencing it. And also, like you said, when we're talking to our kids and maybe you do ask them like, hey, have you ever had any intrusive thoughts about harming yourself or harming others? And, you know, it can feel sticky to approach that, but one, it's not going to cause them to have those thoughts, like you said. Two, that is information that you would want to know. And so get over feeling sticky about talking about it, talk about it, you know? So,
yeah. Now, Chrissy, I'm going to look at to you again to share a little bit about what the OCD healing process was like for you. You did share at the beginning that it was one that took a bit more time. And as I shared, for most people, it's going to be on the longer, slower side. And that can be frustrating for so many reasons. But I would like to hear a little bit about your experience yourself and then also for your son.
Yeah. So really kind of easy to describe for my son, because I felt like it just was that 2 to 3 steps forward, 1 step back, very gradual healing as everything else was kind of healing and lifting and that type of thing. For myself, I felt like OCD stuck around for quite some time in its full-blown form. It was there for, there was other things that were moving and shifting, but it's like, I'm still stuck in this place, like in my mind, and I'm like this prisoner in my thoughts and all of that. And something really interesting was the first remedy that I was ever on, I was on it for quite some time. And so in the beginning, the OCD wasn't shifting and I kept thinking like, this remedy is not going to address it. Like this, I'm going to have to, you know, get through all these other symptoms healing, and then maybe the next remedy will address the OCD. And it was that remedy. It was the first remedy that started shifting the OCD as well. It just took time for the layers to kind of peel back to get to that place. And I will never forget the day that it started going away, because I was vacationing in Canada. I was at my parents' house. I was taking a shower, and I had an intrusive thought pop into my mind. And it just occurred to me, my God, I haven't had these for several days. And that was, it was happening every day. Like that was odd. And it was like, I didn't even realize it had kind of shifted. And from there, it just got better bit by bit. To kind of harken back to what you were saying a minute ago, we're all going to have intrusive thoughts, but it wasn't ruling my life anymore. I would get one and I'd be like, whoa, that's not something I want to be thinking about. And I would just kind of push it out of my mind and move on. That was not what was happening for me when I started. Like, you could not push it out. It was all consuming. So I don't know exactly when that was in my healing journey, but definitely many months in to the process.
I feel like at one of your interviews that you did in our Facebook group, that I think you shared that it was like 11 or 12 months, like almost into like the year space before you really started.
That could
to
be accurate. That could be accurate. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Cody? It doesn't always, and maybe this is just me not remembering real clearly, probably because it wasn't like one of the more most problematic things for Avery. I feel like hers started shifting relatively early.
Yes, hers did. And it, as I said, when we talk about everything with the homeopathic healing journey, we're talking about averages. We're talking about the what we see is the most typical, but there's things on all spectrum of how people heal. Some people, it's the first thing that improves, and other things are more sticky. You know, sometimes it's the last thing that improves, and you're more on like the side where Chrissy, where you don't see it budge at all for a year, and then you see it start to gradually improve. And then you see some people who are in the middle, where you're seeing slow and steady progress, but it's still really a prominent symptom. So I do think, as I recall back to all those years ago with Avery, I do think hers started to heal sooner. And you caught PANS fast in her. And she was still, like, she was not really in the place where it was only happening during flares. She had a lot more persistence of her symptoms, and she wasn't really having like the episodic changing. So she wasn't in that realm where we're only seeing OCD when there's a virus or a bacterial infection or whatever. But you guys also had mold that you didn't know about. So that also complicates things. And you found it pretty quickly after we got started too. So that's another factor that changed things for Avery that can also have an impact on people. If they're having a constant exposure to something, makes a symptom that is more persistent anyway, even more persistent.
Yeah, I do remember this being a very, like, personally, it being a very post-traumatic stress triggering symptom.
Yes.
Like when it would go away and then it would come back, I didn't realize how problematic it was in our world. And like I said, OCD wasn't, it wasn't one of the big bad ones for us, but holy cow, when it came back, I do remember being like just crushed because it was so nice getting some relief from that. So, you know, maybe just recognizing that for families that are in the middle of it and going backwards and just feeling that like heart-crushing feeling of that coming back, you know, you go back into reporting it and your provider will help you, you know, get things back on track, work through it, eventually get to a better space again. But it's the back and forth on that symptom was hard for me, but it did finally completely go away.
Yeah. So I'm curious if you guys could both share what healed looks like for you now, because you're both on the other side for the most part with OCD, correct? So what does that look like for you now?
So it looks like, for my son, just complete resolution of all of those things I mentioned. It was truly tied to his PANS and what was going on. And it's all gone at this point. For me, the OCD is pretty much completely gone as well. Like I will have an intrusive thought here or there. I think it is very well within normal. I really do. It does not interfere with my life. It does not cause me to spiral. And I don't feel like I have to control everything because I feel like that was part of it. I felt like very out of control in many ways at that time. I don't feel that way at all. I guess it's gone. You know, as far as I'm concerned, there's no aspect about it that is controlling my life.
Same thing with Avery. Avery is, she still asks a whole lot of really good and also really like completely out in outer space questions. They're not obsessive. They're not repetitive. Like she's just a learner. She wants to learn about the world. I mean, it's in a really, really healthy way now. And, you know, she's free because it's almost like, I feel like OCD is kind of like chains that lock you up and you can't really like, I don't know, you can't exist with any type of ease whenever you're stuck in that. So she's had freedom from that. And this has been for years and years. Like she's been done with all of her stuff for a long time. And two, like as Chrissy was talking about intrusive thoughts, I was like, oh, okay, I had OCD too, because that was one of my big things whenever I was younger, especially in high school. And not, you know, not stuff I talk about very frequently, but as I was moving through my healing journey, that was something that sort of shifted for me too. And for me, it was seeing a very like violent, gruesome thing over and over again, and it just would replay over and over again. And, you know, I hadn't thought about it for a while. You know, it hasn't been something I talked about for a while. And then a little while back, I was on vacation, and because of, while social media is amazing, it's also horrible. So I accidentally saw exactly what my intrusive thought was, like saw a video of it, saw it multiple times. And I remember like blood draining out of my head. Like I could tell that I looked like a ghost. I felt horrible. And I was like, man, like I just saw it. And I thought for sure it was going to be just a thing that stayed and stayed and stayed. And it took me a couple of hours until I was like taking a deep breath. And I was like, okay, that happened, and we're just going to leave it in the past. And that was it. And I hadn't thought about it since. So for me, it was actually like, unfortunately, being able to actually see the thing that I used to think about over and over and over again, and being able to recover and move on without like being stuck there for long periods of time. Again, it feels like freedom. It feels like I'm not chained by those thoughts.
All right. So I have two more things I want to make sure we cover today, because they come up. And then if there's anything else that you guys want to make sure that we offer to families as well, let me know. So I want to talk about the changing nature of OCD and how it can shift over time. And then I also want to talk about therapy. So let's first talk about OCD and its the focus, the presentation of symptoms. In many cases are static. They oftentimes with more with like pure OCD, not PANS driven OCD, it often is a specific fixation or a specific intrusive thought that becomes the primary focus, and there's not a lot of deviation from it. It can change more in PANS, where it can shift from this particular thing that's intrusive and repetitive and that I have to control to something else. That does not mean that things are getting worse. It just means things are shifting, right? Just like we also see in PANS, we see tics that can shift and change over time. We can see the nature of the OCD can shift and change. We just need to follow it where it goes, because it's information for you and for your homeopath that might help with the next remedy. It's not something to lose hope over. It's not something to create your own intrusive and repetitive thought about. Not that you can create it if it's not already present in you. But let's be honest, it's if you got a kid with PANS, it didn't come from nowhere, right? There's the predisposition and susceptibility. So a lot of parents have some of these predispositions themselves as well, or had PANS and didn't recognize it when they were children. It's not something to despair. It's not something to worry over. It's just something to share and follow and move on from it. And it can recover. And it's just another piece of the pie, another piece of information.
And it's also not a space to be mad at homeopathy.
Yeah, because homeopathy is not going to cause anything in somebody that they're not already susceptible to. We're talking about provings, and that's in healthy people. So even in a healthy person, it's not going to cause something you're not already susceptible to. When we're in a PANS state or any other chronic illness, our bodies don't often really actually have the capacity to prove a remedy. It's just such a subtle nudge to the body that if the body's busy with all the chaos that's swirling inside from the illness itself, it doesn't have the capacity to do much of anything with a wrong remedy. So if you're seeing something shift, even if it's happening when you're shifting remedies, it doesn't necessarily mean it's actually caused by the remedy. And even if you and your homeopath can get to the place that you're like, yep, it was clearly, we changed this and this happened, it is a part of the susceptibility, and it's still an important piece of the pie, because a remedy can't cause, it's not exerting a force, like a strong biochemical force on the body the way medications and supplements and herbs are. It is a gentle nudge, and it's not going to nudge something out into existence that wasn't already part of what the body had ready for you. Anything else you guys want to add on that? Or did either of you guys have much of that experience with anything shifting, or was yours more static?
There was some shifting, but you know, when you're in your follow-up appointments with your provider, they ask you like, hey, how about this symptom, right? Since I spoke to you 30 days ago, is this symptom better? Is it worse? Is it the same? Is it different? I would file that under the different category. Like, yeah, it's still there. It's still happening, but it's shifted a little bit.
Yeah. And then the final thing for me, and then I'll hand it over to you guys with your final thoughts, is that therapy can be beneficial for some kids with OCD as part of their presentation of PANS and PANDAS. Not everybody needs it. Many people with OCD will recover with homeopathy alone without needing to use OCD-specific therapies, and some people will benefit greatly. Once we see that most of the other PANS, PANDAS symptoms are improved and maintaining the improvement, and we're seeing a more stubborn OCD case, sometimes adding in OCD-specific therapies at that point can be beneficial, and that homeopathy and therapy can work together synergistically to help get across that finish line, to break up some of the things that are just habit and learned. And this is just how they have been for so long that they have to sort of learn a different way. And so we do have an episode on therapy that we will link to in the show notes. And you can check that episode out about, you know, our thoughts about when it might be useful to add. But it's always best to just talk to your provider. Is this the right time to consider adding therapy? Because we want to make sure that it is likely to be beneficial and not something that we can create an aversion to when it would be beneficial.
Yeah, I think that's excellent, excellent suggestion. Because, you know, with us, one of Avery's OCDs was something that is traumatic to her in her life. And at the time, I'm like, it's PANS. Well, you know, it's something that still comes up that's hard for her. And I really wish towards the end of her healing journey, as she was getting better and she was having less like shifts back and forth into flares, and she was doing a lot better, that I would have shifted into therapy earlier, because it was a thing. She was obsessing about it, but it was actually a traumatic thing.
The thing she needed to work through. All right, ladies, final thoughts.
Just acknowledging that this is hard. You know, OCD is a very tough one. It's a very tough one, especially when it is your child's prominent symptom. I think of OCD as a giant octopus. I don't know why that is what's in my mind about it, but he's purple. And the whole octopus is the OCD, but the tentacles go into every aspect of your life. It goes into anxiety. It goes into depression. It disrupts your sleep. It's just such an all-encompassing symptom. And so ride the waves. Homeopathy can do the work. It takes time. That is the main thing. And just know that this can absolutely heal and get better. And I'm proof of that.
I agree with everything that you said, Chrissy. And this is a hard one for me to watch as, you know, talking to parents that are working with resilience and also folks in the group. It's really, it's hard to watch, you know, families that are kind of in this space. And it's a hard one to manage, right? Because it takes a lot of management on the parent's behalf and, you know, obviously the child. But the more time that you sit in that space and observe and report and just keep taking steps forward. And it's hard because when you're in the middle of it, it does not feel like you're moving. It feels like you're still and you're stuck and your child's stuck in the bathroom for 4 hours or whatever it might look like. But if you keep showing up to your monthly appointments, if you keep telling your provider and keep following instructions, slowly but surely, you're going to walk your way out of this. And you're not going to see the steps in the middle of it. But over time, you'll get back, just like Chrissy said earlier, hey, I hadn't, you know, we hadn't talked about that for a while, or I hadn't thought about that for a while. It will slowly fade into the past. You just have to keep moving forward. So I encourage everyone who's sitting in that hard space right now to just keep taking baby steps and doing the best that you can to manage it and keep moving forward. And I'm sending you lots and lots of love and virtual hugs and all of the things, because it's a tough one.
Well, thank you both for coming to talk about your experience and your thoughts and offering the love that you've offered to the people who are stuck in the suck where you have both existed in the past. So we will look forward to another conversation with Chrissy about another aspect of healing with Pans and Pandas as part of this series. And we'll be back with you guys with another episode next week. Take care, everybody.
Thanks. Bye.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We would love to connect with you on social media and have you as part of our amazing community. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas.
If Facebook isn't your thing, you can also connect with us on Instagram and YouTube by searching for Resilience Naturopathic or clicking the links in our show notes. You can also visit our website, resiliencenaturopathic.com.
As always, we value your partnership in advocacy and education. Your support through following, sharing, rating, and reviewing our podcast is crucial in our mission to teach the world about Pans, Pandas, and homeopathy. So if you found this podcast helpful, please leave us a review. Together, we are making a difference.
And finally, this podcast really is for you. Your questions and feedback help us make sure we are answering the right questions so you can feel confident making the next right step for your kids. Send us your questions or request guests by emailing us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com, also linked in the show notes.